Hello, and welcome to the EDUCAUSE podcast. This podcast is sponsored by Moran Technology Consulting, providing management and IT consulting services to higher education institutions around the world. MoranTechnology.com. This podcast features a session from the EDUCAUSE 2012 annual conference. The presentation is entitled A CIO's First Year, and our speakers include Joanne Kasuth, Vice President for Operations and CIO for the Franklin W. Olin College of Engineering, Ann Kowalczyk, CIO for Drake University, Bruce Moss, CIO and Vice Provost for IT at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and Brian Voss, Vice President and CIO for the University of Maryland.
Let me start with Ann. Why don't you take a second and just open remark for a minute or so?
Sure. I've been at Drake for 2 years, and I am grateful for the opportunity to talk with this group. When we first got together thinking about this session, one of the names that we played with was the first 100 days, and I kept thinking 100 years, because this is my first CIO experience, and it does sort of have the quality of a magical realism in it in some ways. And it really has been quite a journey. And I've come to realize how challenging this job is in ways that I would never have imagined. And it's wonderful to, you know, talk with my colleagues and find out that that is a shared experience in many ways.
Hi, I'm Bruce Moss. I'm the Chief Information Officer, University of Wisconsin-Madison. And this is my second CIO job. I've been in the position for a little over a year now, having spent the majority of my career in a variety of roles at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. The experience with the first job has really helped me with the second, and I can say that unambiguously. It is amazing to be able to have a fresh start. You get to start over, in effect, with a new environment, and you can forget all of those things that you made mistakes about on the first, and you can think about the things that you need to do to be more effective with the second. So it's a wonderful thing being able to have that fresh start and be able to utilize what you learned before. The other thing I'd like to say is that nothing has changed in my perspective about the importance of having humility in this job. It remains a very strong element of us being effective, is learning to have a sense of humor and appropriate level of humility, because it's a difficult job.
And I'm Joanne Kasuth. I'm the Vice President for Operations and the CIO at Olin College of Engineering. So in addition to IT, I have the other fun jobs that nobody wants, like dining services, facilities, HR, conference services. You put a service in, it sort of falls in my ballpark because we're a relatively small institution. I've had a number of experiences CIO. Each of them has been really unique and different. I think what I've learned from all of them is they're all an adventure. And as Bruce said, the sense of humor is so critically important, as is a thick skin. But more so than that, even is listening skills and listening to what people are really asking for as opposed to what they think they're asking for, because there can be a difference in that. But they're all an opportunity to really add value, and I think that becomes more critical as we move forward in these days in higher education. So they're an adventure, they're a challenge, but you'll never be bored.
And I'm Brian Voss from University of Maryland, as I said before, and to prove that we are unique snowflakes, I'll provide the counterpoint to Bruce's argument, which is this is my second CIO stop. And just when I thought I learned everything there was to learn at LSU, I come to Maryland and discover I have a lot more to learn, and which was interesting because I worked at Indiana and I thought I knew everything when I came from there and went to LSU, so had that experience. So I think one of the points that I'll try and draw out in my comments to the various questions we're going to answer today is just this unique nature of the challenges that we face as CIOs, whether it's our first CIO stint or second or third, and that there is just this wide diversity in institutions, and it really does play into another thing. In addition to good sense of humor, thick skin, and humility, is you have to be a quick learner and willing to learn. So, with our opening statements out of the way, we chatted ahead of time about some areas that we thought would be good to cover, and the first one that we came up with had to do with expectations. So whenever you take a job, you always have this set of expectations based on your past experiences. So I would pose to the panel the question, was it everything you hoped it would be? And if it's your first job, how did that go? And if it's not your first job, how did it compare to the first? So let me start with Anne and ask your view on that.
I don't know that I have... I still sit very much in the midst of figuring out if it meets my expectations because every day is so different. I think, though, that one of the things that I realized I had to do very early is the expectations that I had were formed based on my past experience, and I had to let that go because I was in a new place, in a new institution, working at a new level. And I remember thinking to myself that I had to be very deliberate about working differently than I had at my previous institution where I had been in a deputy CIO position. And once I realized that, and that was probably 3 or 4 months in, that helped me kind of shift lenses so that the expectations I had could be reformed with the new experience and knowledge I had at Drake with my feet on the ground there. Because, I don't care how hard you interview and push for questions and understand the institution before you take the job, when you get there, you get the other 90% of the information you need over a period of time. And that really requires you then to kind of reset your expectations.
Bruce?
Well, I had an advantage. I was already a part of the University of Wisconsin system, and so I had many, many interactions with my colleagues at UW-Madison when I was at UW-Milwaukee. And so there was very little that I hadn't seen of the issues through the years by being directly connected with my colleagues. In addition, during the recruitment process, the university made really clear to me what they expected for the issues that I would be dealing with. There was a very clear roadmap in my view, and that is tracked very well. What surprised me was I was paired up when I started with a senior dean to be my peer partner, which was amazingly beneficial to me. Dean Piercy from the College of Engineering was assigned to help me to learn how to navigate within this complex culture and to be there as an advisor to me. And that was extremely beneficial, very giving, and having a senior leader help. And that was very, helped me to be more effective. And that was a surprise. I did not expect that. The other thing that was a surprise was a senior faculty member, fairly prominent in computer science, reached out to me and also helped really to coach me on how I could interact effectively with the faculty with regard to research computing. And those were not always easy conversations, I will tell you. The feedback that I got was pretty unambiguous at times, and I did not always go in with the right perspective from the point of view of this individual, but what he did was help me to navigate within the culture of the university, which I found extremely beneficial. So no surprises about the expectations and the culture, but big surprises at how willing senior level leaders were to work with me to help me to be successful.
And Joanne, what about your expectations?
So my first CIO position, I actually had written a thesis for my master's degree on developing and implementing systems for small businesses. And to my surprise, the president read it, came and said to me, "You're now going to be called director of IT and we're going to computerize the college." So this was in the late 80s. So sometimes be careful what you wish for or what you write that's theoretical, because you might actually have to do it. But it was a great example of just putting the pedal to the metal and moving forward. So there really were no expectations beyond you will do it and get it done. It was pretty wide open. And I'll contrast that with my experience at Olin. Olin is a startup institution. We just graduated our 7th class in May, and it's all engineering faculty. And when I first started at Olin, I started as a consultant because they weren't going to need any IT people because the engineers could take care of it. So the expectations were very different in terms of what would happen. And when we talked a lot about standards, and we talked a lot about how to implement things and the network. And I was like, cool, we're all on the same page. Well, then I started to actually do those things, and they were like, no, that's not what we wanted. That wasn't what we thought we told you. And so the whole communication piece and the expectation of it's not just what people say, but actually what's behind the scenes that you have to figure out in terms of the culture was a real learning experience for me at Olin.
And from my perspective, and I turned this inward, the expectations were, you know, really back to what I said in the opening about myself. And to be honest, I expected the job to be easier, given it was my second time. And it wasn't. It was as hard, if not harder. And it actually, and this will dovetail sort of into this next topic we're going to talk about, is experiences. And Bruce touched on it a little bit. But, you know, I think that sometimes when you move to your second or subsequent role and you have that expectation about how it worked before, that can really in some ways bind you and constrain you to trying to repeat that past experience as opposed to realizing that you've been put into a different situation. So the institution, you certainly met my expectations. I went into this job very much eye-open, the staff of my organization, the campus community. So there weren't those sort of expectational issues that weren't met, but the surprising thing was about myself. And so, and we move on to the second topic, which is experiences. And this is where Bruce mentioned the focus of this is really what was the most surprising thing that you had? And that can either be pleasant or unpleasant. I'll start with Joanne this time.
So I think the most surprising thing that I had was the willingness, as Bruce said, of people to work with you. But the most surprising thing I encountered with a new institution was everybody brought their baggage from their old institution. So for a period of months when anybody started as a new employee, we would hear, well, at BU we did it this way. At MIT we did it this way. And those were always the best solutions. So not only was I bringing a perspective from different institution with me, but everybody else I was dealing with at a new startup environment was bringing expectations of their old institutions. And the amount of work we had to do to get us all on the same page in terms of creating a joint expectation for this new endeavor was a surprise. I certainly didn't expect to do that much work around building the culture and building the team.
Mm-hmm. Anne?
You know, I was thinking, Drake University is the smallest school that I've worked at. It's about 3,000 undergraduates and 2,000 graduates. And one of the things that I realized at a university that size is how informal the communication is. And so what surprised me was the challenge of trying to create predictable or repeatable mechanisms institutionally to drive change that required communication without seeming to be creating a bureaucracy, because people really push back on that. And so having the balance in such a way that I would be able to leverage that informal communication mechanisms that were there against something a little bit more structured, because our work has so many levels of complexity. That was a real surprise for me, and not necessarily a pleasant one, because it took me a while to figure out that's what was going on. On the other hand, because it's a small university, it's very easy to get access to the executive leadership. I am not on the cabinet, but you know, I can get onto the cabinet fairly easily if there's an issue that needs to be discussed, and I have easy access and email and text with all the senior leaders. And so that was very pleasant, because it helped me see how decisions were made in a very informal manner, and then begin to build and execute those decisions operationally.
And Bruce, you had touched on some of that during your last one. Is there anything you want to elaborate on that?
Yes. What surprised me is that I was allowed to make new mistakes. And that was, as long as I didn't repeat them, people made that pretty clear, that repeating the same mistakes is not a good thing. But if you made mistakes in a sense of pushing forward in a way that was viewed as advancing the institutional mission. That was accepted. However, I also learned about boundaries. And the boundaries at my new institution are different than the boundaries at my former institution. And so here there was plenty of good feedback that would come in from the faculty, very polite because it's Wisconsin, and it's the only thing that people know. But it's very firm and polite, saying, faculty make those kinds of decisions, and thank you for your helpfulness, but keep that in mind. And I thought that was, it was surprising, and it was really beneficial. So in a way, it's a way of coaching level that was occurring within the campus, again, about helping, that when you come into an institution that's been in existence for 165 years, there are just a few people who take a little bit of pride in the fact that it's been there that long and that there's a way of doing things. So getting that, the willingness of people to give me that kind of coaching, I think, and the way it was delivered to me in a very non-destructive manner, it was surprising, but it was very uplifting.
Yeah. And I think my surprising moment, and I see some of my folks sitting here, so they're going to keep me honest so that they'll make me actually say this, was when you're offered during your interview a tour, a data center tour, look at the facilities, don't go, oh, the only thing more boring than one data center tour is another. Take the tour. Because I discovered that was going to end up being one of our major challenges that we're going to have to address is a facilities question. But that, to me, again, the major surprise had to do with my own situation and surprised that 6-plus years at Louisiana State on top of 20 years at Indiana did not give me the answer to every question that I was going to encounter. And I really honestly thought I would have more answers than I did. So, again, I think the lesson learned here is go in eyes open, especially about yourself. Well, and again, you know, Bruce is sort of our canary in the coal mine leading the discussion forward, and I heard him mention culture. And we had an interesting conversation on this, and Anne, actually, this is her academic discipline. And I have to actually read this to make sure I get it right. But she said we needed to discuss the concept of assimilation versus acculturation, which is, you know, do we fit or do we change the place? Is it the Borg or not? And I'm going to open this one. And I think that's all in universities, again, are different. And their cultures that are completely different. And what culture you had from one institution is not necessarily going to be what you find at the one you come to. And again, you know, my folks know this. There was a point in this whole do I assimilate or do I change, when I realized that my senior staff and I, after a few months, while working, you know, learning about each other and working together, we're still just not clicking. And it suddenly dawned on me one day on a drive to Annapolis that it was this issue, that there was a frustration that my organization, and to, I think to an extent the campus, was waiting for me to assimilate the Maryland and the vice president of IT culture. When was I going to start acting the way they expected the IT leader to act? Versus I viewed that I was hired by the president and brought in to change this. And that my frustration was, why wasn't my leadership team and my campus grasping that I was not going to do things the same way, that I was not going to trim those square edges off of my peg. And so I do understand that, you know, you just can't come in and willy-nilly do things differently, that there is a culture, as Bruce mentioned, that, you know, they've been successful doing this for 150 years, and, you know, who the hell are you to change that? That said, I think it's incumbent, especially in our profession, for us to be agents of change. So with that sort of lead-in, let me, again, go down the bench here, and since this is your discipline, you know, what's your view on this topic?
Well, I think it, as a CIO or any kind of technology leadership position, I think you're constantly trying to get the right mix of pushing for some change and then trying to sustain and bolster the things that are good about the institution that you're in. And so the best way to do this is really to build coalitions of folks. And it takes time, so I think being very patient and, you know, as much as I like revolution, and I really do in most cases, I think this is a case where incremental change has a lot of value. You have to really pace the community through this process. And I knew I had done that effectively when about a year after I was at Drake, I had had to take some rather severe organizational change processes and had to really use a lot of campus political capital. And one of the members of the search committee, who also serves on one of the core governance groups, remarked that, well, I guess you are going to pull us into the future kicking and screaming. I thought, well, you know, that is a little bit of what you hired me to do. And, you know, I sometimes think that I have to very deliberately, every time I make a difficult decision to push in a new hard direction, I think, okay, what am I going to compromise myself on and accept as non-negotiable that is of value to the institution? And that keeps me very attuned, therefore, to what is unique about the institution.
Bruce?
I'd like to build on that a little bit. I think you need to be pretty clear about what your core values and your core principles are and know where you don't bend. But within that, I view it as I was hired really to solve a simultaneous equation. And that equation has three parts to it. I was hired to do certain things, and they are different than the way things have been done in the past. So that's one element. Then I was expected to respect certain things. These are not mutually exclusive. Respect certain things. And then third is I was mentored into how to get things done. Now you'll notice there's not a lot of precision in that. That requires some real thoughtfulness in thinking through how can you meet those multiple needs, but that's the expectation at this level, is that with the experience that we have, we'll figure that out. We'll figure out how to navigate, know where to push, where you need to push, and know where you need to back up. But all the while, having a firm and communicating a firm sense of vision, principles, and values. Again, one of the things that was, it just hadn't quite anticipated in that was that in the culture, it isn't what I say to people, it's what people say to each other about the work that I'm doing. And it is amazing the level of interconnectedness that I learned about of who is in whose network and who's giving feedback to whom and who the provost is hearing from about how I'm executing on certain things. And so that gave me a good awareness of the culture, how deep it is, and frankly, how collaborative it is.
And I think at Olin, because, again, we're new, it was a little bit of a challenge in an opposite way, because the focus was on innovation and change. So the core values were innovation and change. We didn't have a 150-year history of things to build on or the way that we had always done things. And what was challenging about that was we all interpreted innovation differently. So there was sort of the faculty tribe, as the president called it, and the staff tribe and the student tribe. And we had to figure out a way to build consensus among the tribes because we were all interpreting innovation differently. So the faculty were innovating in pedagogy, and they just assumed that we'd figure out what technology would support their pedagogy, and they didn't have to give us some specifics around their requirements. The students were just moving forward. The latest, greatest thing that came out 2 seconds later, you know, IT was behind because we didn't keep up with the latest, greatest thing that came out, even though we were supposed to be innovative. So really trying to set realistic expectations and explain to people what happens in an enterprise setting, things like security issues. We found we had to do a lot of education of the faculty, of the students, but we also had to be educated by them in terms of what their core areas of focus were and where we could add value. So this became a really ongoing exercise in attending faculty meetings, getting on agendas, having student working groups, but creating these ways to have input and also to hear back on a regular basis so that we could take what were essentially three separate tribes and assimilate them in a way that we would all move the institution forward.
So, Chris, I know that we started a little late, and I want to try and keep us on time. So I want to pose one more question to this group and then maybe go to the Q&A with the folks here as well as online if you're starting to see some online questions. So I know that there are probably a number of aspiring CIOs in this audience, and I think that this is a relevant question, given all of us are, as I use the term, alien transplants. So under the broad rubric of do I stay or do I go, what counsel would you have for aspiring folks in the audience about this question of can I be a prophet in my own land? Can I rise through the ranks of an IT organization or a campus structure and become the CIO? Or do I need to pack the bag and pick up and move and deal with this cultural assimilation or acculturalization question? And you know, what's your view on it? So we all did it, but why did we do it? And I'll start with Joanne this time.
Sure. I think that depending on your institution and size and team size matters, but you can, I think, stay at your own organization and work your way up. You need to look for opportunity to participate in the campus at a higher level, things like committees, working groups, ways to engage yourself in the strategic level of the institution, regardless of what your current position is in the institution, you can work your way up. I think there's also a point where you look at the opportunities and say, okay, this is going to take me 25 years. If I stay here, there's these other opportunities elsewhere that I feel I'm qualified for, and now would be a good time to decide to go. And I think if you decide to do that, the way you go and how you go about it leaves a legacy where you're currently at, so you need to be really careful about how you proceed. But it's an either-or situation depending on your read, and if you have a network and colleagues you can trust to have those conversations with, they can be really helpful with their viewpoints.
Bruce?
I've done both. So I stayed at one institution in a variety of roles till I became the CIO, and then I went to another institution, so I've done both. There are many opportunities. I would reinforce what Joanne said, to go through different roles at your institution. I had four major different roles at my first institution over 30 years, only two of them were related to IT. Others were on the business side of the organization and the academic side of the organization. So you, again, I think there are opportunities if you position yourself and others see that you're a person who's willing to work hard, listen carefully, understand the mission, what the true mission is of your university, you have the potential. But I can also say now from the experience of being at a second institution where I got a fresh start, I didn't get a fresh start at the first institution. So you can be typecast. And the way people look at you may be from any of the various roles that you've held there. So I found myself bumping up against the ceiling a little more often because of perceptions of individuals who had known me in a prior role that I had been in and feeling like perhaps I was overreaching in a sense, even though I had this new role. It's amazing to me I'm the same person, yet at one institution I felt I was overreaching a bit, and now at my other institution, I get people encouraging me to be more assertive. I kind of like the second one. That's working pretty well for me.
And this is relevant. You and I had the conversation, actually, because Ann was at Tulane, and I was just up the road, and so she and I had the conversation about this. So
yeah.
You know, interested in your view.
And I have moved quite a bit. I think this is a profoundly personal question, too, because you know, your ability to pick up and go somewhere, you know, typically dependent on your family environment and if that is feasible or not. And so you really got to be sure what works there. And once you've made that decision, then I think, you know, if you go someplace else, and again, I have been pretty consistent in moving because I don't really personally have a strong sense of place, you're always the outsider. And so you have to learn to leverage that outsider status. And, you know, related to what we were the previous question, I think you therefore make a lot of mistakes in integrating into the culture. And as Bruce said earlier, you have to be humble and apologize, and that's how you get a little bit more orientation. If you're internal, it's harder to identify the opportunities to take risks, and it's harder to take risks. But I think it's just the difference is really in the different tactics you might use to have an organizational impact. And frankly, although I have moved a lot, it seems that within a year and a half of any new place I'm in, I've reached that status of not being able to be a prophet because, you know, you get like 2 years of a honeymoon and then the gig is up and everyone knows your approach. And you inevitably, while you may be an outsider, you've lost the element of surprise. So you still have to think about how am I going to move through this organization internally.
So, and I'll do this with a story. There are probably some Indiana people here. McRobbie, who's now the president, used to fondly talk about when he arrived in 1997 and he was talking to some of the leadership at the time, and he said, yeah, there was this guy with long hair and a ponytail and wearing sandals and a Mickey Mouse t-shirt, and he was referring to me. And I did have long hair and a ponytail. Never in my life have I owned a Mickey Mouse t-shirt, nor would I ever have worn sandals to work. But yet, you know, that's the perception that was in that mind. And so you are often cast by, you know, something that you may have done 20 years ago. I'll amplify the point again. It's situational and it's unique. We just saw Irv Blythe honored as for a leadership award. Irv Blythe, from the time he was a freshman cadet at Virginia Tech to the time he retired, he was at Virginia Tech. Spent his whole life there, very successful, and one of the true leaders in our profession. My friend Brad Wheeler at Indiana University, same thing, was able to rise and do that. And yet, Dave Schwartz, our other award winner, and all of us, including me, you know, realized we had to make that move. So I think it's very much, there's not a cookie approach here, there's not one right solution, it's you. It's what your characteristics and your history are, and what's the situation and the culture and the environment at the institution you're at as to whether that's going to be possible and whether you're going to be successful. So, all right, Chris, I think we have chewed through some time here, and we wanted to turn this over to any questions that the audience might have. So I'm going to let you moderate from here on.
Well, and I'm going to let whoever has a question come up to the microphone right now. Do we have any questions out of this whole room of brilliant people?
I see someone heading towards a mic.
Can you walk
someone
towards
else?
The microphone?
Either that or they're leaving.
There's a gentleman over there. Got to get to the microphone quickly. Yes, sir.
So I guess at the beginning of the presentations, you all spoke that you find the job to be difficult. And I agree. The job is very difficult, but I'm really interested in what each of you find to be the most difficult part of your job.
You know, the most difficult part is determining what part is most difficult. The answer to that question is, I think it's all difficult. Coming in from outside, you know, the relationships that we've talked about, how do you establish those, that's difficult. Getting a leadership of what can often be large organizations that have a diverse history and things. How do you get control of that? That's hard. Establishing your credibility with the key constituencies of the faculty, the deans, and students. That's hard. Dealing with what has been left behind by your predecessor, both good and bad, is hard. So I can't tell you what is most hard. I can tell you it's all hard. But, you know, I think that's what these jobs are. And I don't want to scare. We had a big discussion about the pipeline for CIOs. We don't want to scare anyone out of that pipeline, but realize it's not easy. And this is a commitment you're making for your life. Anyone else?
I think the hardest thing is helping the campus community understand what I do. I mean, helping my mother understand what I do is hard. because it's so broad. And, you don't want to sort of present yourself as as the biggest brain in the room and the hero who has their fingers in everything, but essentially you do have your fingers in everything, and you're not the biggest brain in the room. So I often feel like I'm going around asking people if I can come to their party. And they sort of think, well, why do you need to be here? And then they realize why I need to be there once I'm there and discussing the implications from a technology point of view. But people don't, you know, they don't really understand what we do until they have a desktop problem or a network problem or the ERP doesn't function in some way. But that's such a narrow focus that that isn't really representative of what we do.
And I know you asked to hear from all of us, but I think to speed it along, why don't we go ahead and take the next questioner here, and then Bruce and Joanne can have the chance to answer your question.
Hi, thank you for the discussion. So during the discussion, you spoke about different challenges and learnings, but what would you say was the most impactful learning, and how has that helped you in the future?
So I think for me, the most impactful learning also goes to one of the things that's difficult, which is managing yourself. When you go somewhere and you're new and you're on your honeymoon period, everybody has all this pent-up demand. They have pent-up demand, and they want to talk to you, and they have the best idea, and they want your attention, and they're grabbing you in the hall, and you're trying to give them answers because you want to look like you have answers. And what I learned is it's best to not provide answers in the hallway and let people grab the arm. It's best to say, you know, this is a really important topic, and we should have a good discussion. Let's schedule something. Because otherwise what will happen is the perception piece, they'll hear what they want to hear from what you said, and they'll run with the ball, and before you know it, the entire community is talking about something you supposedly did that you never did. So one of the challenges, I think, to manage yourself and manage your own time and how you communicate, and that stands you in good stead moving forward, regardless of whether you stay in your own institution or move to another one.
Yeah, I would just say, and it's kind of combining the last one with the first one, this one with the first question, and that is, you know, I was thinking about what's hard and what's good, is you have to have a thick skin, but the coin of the realm is respect. And so operating in a way that builds respect, I think, and however you do that, and I think, Joanne, listening carefully and not being glib in your responses is one way of gaining that. I just think you need to continually balance those things.
Okay. Next question.
I'm coming from a university where I'd spent quite a bit of time and transitioned into a new university because the opportunity to move up presented itself. And I'm wondering, I had a number of people who I would consider confidants in my old university and people I could go to bounce ideas off or rant or whatever I needed to do that day. And I'm struggling trying to find that person in my new university. And I'm wondering how did you go about finding that confidant or that peer group that you could feel safe with?
Well, I'll start this. So I had a very unique situation at Maryland, and it may not be your situation, in that the senior leadership team, from the president through almost the complete set of vice presidents, has turned over in 2 years. And there's a lot of other alien transplants in this group. And so, you know, finding the confidant is really hard because, you know, Ringo Starr said, trust don't come easy. But I've been able to find one of my fellow vice presidents who I've really just gone ahead, done the surfing off the stage thing and decided to trust. And we're seeing how that goes. You're right, because I think since these jobs are so hard, having someone to talk to is critical. If I was to give a piece of advice, though, until you really know that you found that person, use that old network from your old institution to bounce some ideas off of, so that you don't make a mistake of, as Joanne said, you're in a moment of trying to churn through something, and you say something, and suddenly that becomes an edict. When only you were meant to just sort of unload it. So that would be my view of that.
I would say part of this is really it's an art, is determining, there's no formula for this, is whoever it is you select, it has to be someone you trust, and it has to be someone who you can feel comfortable working with, and you don't create other problems by misjudging along the way. Sharing something confidentially with the wrong person is a real ticket to getting on the fast train out. The other thing is what's safe is connecting at EDUCAUSE and other organizations and building confidence in your network. Oftentimes having an out-of-university network to bounce ideas off of gives you a fresher perspective.
And just one quick thing, it doesn't have to be someone within higher education. That helps because they understand the culture. But there are a lot of folks out there that you could build your network with that have similar CIO experiences in corporations and in other nonprofits. And surprisingly, the issues are all the same. They may be just a little different flavor. But don't ever give up on building your network and look to expand it as much as possible because that always leaves you options in terms of feedback.
Let's just take one more question from this gentleman here. We have about, I'm going to let us run 3 minutes over since we got a bit of a late start.
Sure, I'm Rich Ziegler from Loyola University, Maryland. My question for you all is in terms of the latest and greatest technologies that are coming out and being leading edge, the adoption and rollout of such technologies. And I'm not talking just about the latest and greatest gizmo from Apple, but I'm also talking about new products that are being released by established strategic partners that you have, vendors that you're working with, and they're recommending that you go with one of these products. How do you handle that?
That's why I have deputy CIOs and officers to help advise me with that, because I'm not technical. An interesting question from a vendor at Axis, which is the Japan version of this, yesterday. And he sort of asked that question. And my advice is, just turn it a little bit, I want to make sure I have a problem to solve before I bring a solution in. So someone may have a great solution to a problem, but it may not be a problem that is in my strategic list. I mean, we just spent the better part of, 6 months working with our community to build a strategic plan. And one of the pieces of advice that we got from the community is, see this plan, do this stuff, don't do other stuff. Now, it's broad-based, so we can probably fit a lot of new developments in. But I think chasing that you know, new technology thing constantly is like playing whack-a-mole. And so my counsel is, figure out what your problems are. Work with the vendors and the emerging technologies to find solutions. There may be an emerging one that solves your problem like that. That's the one to go for.
We all have extremely limited resources at all our universities, and the fact is we have to focus like a laser on the core mission and anything that advances the core mission. Everything else is distraction and noise. And so focus, I think, on what the mission is and is. Brian, that's it about, you try to solve a problem. First, define what that problem is rather than, oh, isn't this wonderful? If it's not in alignment with your advancing your mission, it isn't worth investing in.
And I have one last thing to add on that, which is the use an external technology advisory board. I've had one since we started the institution because I didn't just want it to be about what I thought we were solving and what we really needed to have. And having that third-party voice that's engaged with you and your institution to really help you when it comes to, A, giving advice on the various products, because I have folks from, say, IBM and HP and cabling companies on the group. We meet twice a year. We communicate in between electronically. But it really helps to have those outside perspectives combined with what your strategic plan is internally.
And I just say, you know, we've talked about this. We've had the better part of 50 minutes. We could talk about this forever. Kinds of conversations that should go on here at EDUCAUSE. That whether it's in the CIO lounge for the CIOs or in sessions or in the hallways or over coffees with your colleagues and new friends, these kind of experiences are where we can share it, and that's the purpose of EDUCAUSE. And Kristen, I'm done. I think we're all done.